On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, ahead of Tarek Skubal's final start as a Tiger? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But that's all the talk in the industry nowadays. Will Tarek Skubal get traded? The deadline is coming fast on Monday. The Tigers have a big decision to make. We do one last round of speculation, thinking about the suitors for Mr. Skubal. Then we talk about the players that will definitely be getting traded from the worst teams in baseball. We go around the league, talk about the Seattle Mariners' win of the season at Dodger Stadium on Tuesday night. And then look at the Minnesota Twins, who sounds like they're going to be going forward and not backward. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that can't wait for a new market to learn that it's not pronounced Tarek Skubal. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And it's also not Tariq.
Do you think, this isn't some nobody. I would hope that we're at mostly proficient in pronouncing his name by this point. No, you have no hope that that's the case?
Brother, you are far too close to the screen on this. If Tarek Skubal gets dealt to the Dodgers, there will be throngs of people in the LA area calling him Tarek Skubal, including at least two people on local television of this, I have no doubt. On today's episode, we will talk quite a bit of Skubal. We'll go through some trade deadline sellers. We'll fly around the league, talk about the Mariners and Ohtani finally talking for the first time in a month. There are more injuries for the two-way superstar, but our opener today is Tarek. Last night, the Detroit Tigers put up two touchdowns on the Baltimore Orioles, clobbering the Birds by a score of 14-0. If only they could copy and paste some of those surplus runs over their other losses, they might be in a better position. The Tigers at present are 51-57, five games back in their division, 3.5 back of the third wild card. There are four teams between them and that wild card spot. There are four games left between today and the deadline. They have a game against the O's this afternoon and then three in Sacramento in Yolo County. They're off on Monday for deadline day. Now, this entire trade season revolves around Mr. Tarek Skubal. Will he? Won't he? Wheareth he? Will he end up? That is the conversation. Jordan and I have wavered back and forth for quite a while about whether or not Skubal would be on the move. Jordan, July 29th, yes or no? Skubal traded.
I'm going to still say no, just to be boring. That doesn't mean we're going to stop the conversation here. But all right, I do think that they're going to win just enough games here over the next few days for either some combination of the front office / ownership to be like, you know what? Let's do this. One more ride. We'll take that comp pick and say thanks for the memes. But it is quite possible that that is not what is going to happen, because in a best case scenario, they win this game today against the Orioles. By the way, Tarek Skubal's on the mound. We should mention that. That seems important. And then those games against the catastrophically bad A's. And that would still put them at 55-57. But in this year's American League, that's a pretty darn good record. Tarek Skubal, as I mentioned, will take the mound today. By the time you're listening to this, it is quite possible he has already struck out 10 Orioles in a row or allowed 10 home runs or somewhere more likely in between. What is likely to happen today, I can say, is that whenever he exits the game, he will probably get a rousing ovation from a Detroit Tigers home crowd who does not know for sure whether they will be cheering him on again after this. I think there will be an acknowledgement of that. I don't think that Skubal will pretend like that is not happening. I do think it will be like a little bit more significant, however that moment happens today. There's some debate. If you read what Cody Stavenhagen wrote, who of course covers the Tigers very well for the Athletic, what he wrote at the beginning of this week is basically, don't be distracted by what happens over the next few days, because the Tigers are probably already leaning one way or the other. He's basically saying that they've already made their bed, and this situation is not going to meaningfully alter how the front office feels about this over these next few games. I think we slightly differ on how much we agree with that sentiment, but yeah. I think that that's maybe an important place to start before we get into the possible suitors.
Yeah, I disagree with that for three reasons. Two reasons. One is, like, if they just crap the bed over the next 4 days and that the gap between them and a playoff spot looks, you know, insurmountable, I think that they will be more compelled to sell. The second reason is that they have not begun to hear packages. We got reporting from Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic yesterday that interested teams had yet to even reach out to President of Baseball Operations Scott Harris and the Detroit Tigers because they did not want to insult him. They thought it would be disrespectful. It is so funny to me, as if, like, he's not expecting Scooble inquiries. and so for that reason, like, we don't know the packages, and Scott Harris doesn't even know the packages. And I think that there is a combination of players that they could be offered that would push the scales in a significant way, particularly if you're looking at a huge return of major league level young controllable talent. If you're going to put a bunch of prospects on a platter and say, here you go, Scott Harris, that is a different equation that he needs to consider than if you're saying, here's Justin Robleski and Andy Pages. You know, like, there are ways that this gets done that is more compelling to ownership, right, in Detroit. And I think that that is important to consider. But for the remainder of this conversation, we are not going to discuss if. We are going to assume if. We are going to move forward as if the Detroit Tigers plan to deal Tarek Skubal. And we're going to run through not most, but many of the potential suitors. What teams could craft a package to get Tarek Skubal, and what teams have the need, the space, and the, let's call it, urgency or desperation to make a move?
Yeah. I mean, I think that all those factors are going to matter. I think, especially in this case, the difference between need and want and would he make them better? Yeah, he'd make every team better. He would have there's no one to be like, no room for him. Yes, we can talk about teams like the Yankees and even teams like the Dodgers to a degree, teams like the Phillies, who at the top of the rotation have a bunch of all-stars and guys that are obviously going to start playoff games. And you could say, all right, well, why is that team going to end up with Tarek Skubal? But they all have to be considered, because the opportunity to acquire a player like this in any circumstance is just, it's a huge deal. And so you can't be, if you're willing to wade in those waters, if you, especially, even if you are, have those a bunch of aces at the top of your rotation, if you're like a Phillies or the Yankees, if you think that's going to stop Dave Dombrowski from checking in, I'm sorry, I think yeah, you're wrong. I think he's gonna consider it, because it would be negligence to not at least find out. And so that also applies to the teams that we're going to talk about, who, if you look at their farm system and the young pitching that they have, doesn't seem like they have a great chance of putting together the best offer. That doesn't mean a team like the Chicago Cubs should not call Scott Harris and be like, hey, is there any way we can make this happen? Because a team like that certainly needs it more than anything.
I would like to start with the four teams that I think, and I'm putting this in quotes and we'll explain in a moment, the teams that don't need Tarek Skubal. Could they use Tarek Skubal? Sure, I could use $1 million. Bet you could too. Red Sox, Yankees, Mariners, Pirates. These four teams are teams that almost have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to their starting pitching. These are clubs that are planning to trade away starting pitching, or in the Red Sox case, have already traded away starting pitching. And that's not to say they could package some of those guys for Skubal. Like, you know, you could do Emerson Hancock and some prospects maybe for the Seattle Mariners. But it's more that these clubs have more pressing concerns, and I would expect them to use their resources to improve other parts of the roster. For the Yankees, that's going to be catcher, obviously. For the Pirates, that's going to be the bullpen. For the Mariners, probably the bullpen as well. I would just be surprised if any of these clubs are the ones paying the exorbitant price to get Scooble.
I agree. I think that the Phillies are close to this category, but a little bit different, and we can move to them here in a second. But I think that they are similar in that, while yes, we know that the bottom of their rotation is problematic, and Tarek Skubal and, you know, sliding those three other all-star level guys down would be an incredible strength, they have other serious needs beyond we need a playoff starter. And so I think that they're all, but I think they're a slightly different category because it's Dombrowski.
I think they're in a slightly different category that we can move to now, which is buyers that will probably, at the end of the day, get outbid. If you're going to pay for Tarek Skubal, you got to give up a lot of good players, a lot of good young players, a lot of good controllable players. And I think crucially, some young starting pitching. And the teams that I don't think have the sauce to get this done are the Phillies, Astros, Pirates, Rangers, Orioles, and Diamondbacks. It's not that they couldn't put a worthwhile package together. It's that if any of the other teams that we'll get to really want Skubal, those six clubs will get outbid.
Yeah, that is, I think, a fair assessment. As we just acknowledged earlier, we don't really know where the bidding is at. And I have a big picture take about what this package can end up being that we'll get to at the end. But in general, yeah, I'm with you, and why it is a much harder to go down the road thinking about these teams making it happen as it is the teams at the top of your list.
Right. The Astros and Padres, I think, are going to be two of the more aggressive teams at this deadline. They are always in win-now mode. However, they are ranked 29th and 30th in farm system rankings by Fangraphs right now. They just, like, there's just not enough. There are under the couch cushions in the farm system at the big league level. They will lose every single time toe-to-toe with the Dodgers building a package.
Yeah. I mean, those are teams, because a lot of the other teams, if you do throw in enough, you can probably get there. The Padres and Astros are so desolate. And I know Houston just had like a really strong draft. So, but they, you know, they're not allowed to trade those players yet anyway. So San Diego, especially, I mean, they need starting pitching as much as anybody. And that's a good transition to the next team I think we should talk about, which is the Cubs. That's what they need to do. And I do expect the Padres over the next few days to acquire a starting pitcher or two and just say, screw it, we're going for it. Sorry, leave us alone about Mason Miller.
Yeah.
Maybe we flip Mora Hone for a starting pitcher, like a controllable starting pitcher. I think that would be an interesting way to do it, because their bullpen, even without Mora Hone, would still be very good. Either way, I think they're going to add, but they do not have what it takes to get Skubal.
Let's talk about the Cubs. There is no team in baseball that I think, my opinion, has a stronger, deeper, more pressing need for one Mr. Tarek Skubal than the Chicago Cubs. There are three reasons for that. This offense is really good. Yep. They have a bunch of capable back end, middle of the rotation arms, and a staff that has been decimated by injuries at the top. That's Edward Cabrera, who they traded for over the winter. That's Cade Horton. And that's Justin Steele. Those are three dudes where you'd be like, yeah, they could start a game one or two of a playoff series. Those guys are all in the IL. I think Cabrera is expected to come back this season. Horton and Steele, not so much. And the third thing is, this might be the best team defense in the sport. Their run prevention is already great. What they do not have is somebody to start a game one of a playoff series. And that is exactly who Tarek Skubal is. The problem, of course, they, like the teams we mentioned before, might not have the horses.
Yeah, this is also a really depleted farm system, particularly on the pitching side. This has been maybe entering the season, and it hasn't really gotten any better because of the injuries to their top prospect, Jackson Wiggins. Maybe the thinnest group of minor league pitchers in the entire league. And they don't have anybody at the major league level. I do think Ben Brown needs to be mentioned here, not even just in a trade context. He was their best pitcher for about a month and a half before he went down with a neck injury. He's working his way back. Obviously, neck injury is no small thing, but it seems like he is going to pitch again this season. And he, like I said, was one of their best pitchers.
Right.
That said, other than his breakout, they just don't. I similar to San Diego, I just don't see what they have to offer. They could overwhelm Detroit with a bunch of young, interesting position players, whether it is, Shaw or Kevin Alcantara or some of the other minor league prospects that have had big seasons. But if we assume that Detroit's looking for pitching, which all by all indications, that is what they're going to be doing, I just don't see how they can come up with anything close.
And the Cubs are an interesting example of like how prospect status can be misleading, where if you look at a guy like Jackson Wiggins and you pull up a top 100 list from before the season, you're like, oh, wow, Jackson Wiggins could fetch Tarek Skubal. Well, Jackson Wiggins missed a ton of time this year due to injury and then has come back and has been awful in AAA over five starts, walking like a batter an inning. And so that right now is not a viable piece to lead a Skubal package, which is why you need to look at it. Like, we're talking about prospect status in a snapshot, right?
Yes. Yeah. The last thing I would say about the Cubs, and then we can move to really the big four that we could focus on is, I mean, they just DFA Jameson Taillon, which I think is a significant move in a lot of respects, just from the standpoint of, first of all, I mean, what a human being. And a person that I know means a lot to that clubhouse and to a lot of different clubhouses. Guy's just been giving up so many home runs. And I know some people have been, and this has been true the whole season, it's like, well, you still need innings. Like, how could you even afford to get rid of a guy that's still giving you new innings? That's the state of affairs with Chicago. They are acting with urgency here. And even if that means, you know, shifting more towards Assad, David Peterson has honestly pretty much delivered everything you could hope so far. That's still not someone I think they're going to be excited to give the ball to in October. So, yeah, we've laid it out. They are going to have to add in some form. I expect them to. But I just don't think that they have to end up with the best bid because of the four teams we're about to talk about.
Clear top four. Braves, Rays, Brewers, Dodgers. Let's start with the Braves because the Braves are somewhat similar in my mind to the Cubs, except they probably do have the pieces to go get Skubal. The Braves have not, behind Chris Sale, gotten top flight starting pitching performances since really the first month of the year. They got off to a hot start. Their rotation ERA is 4.40. That's 18th in baseball since May 1. That is a result of the two Spencers, Schwellenbach and Strider, being non-factors, AJ Smith-Shaver on the IL. They have a real void at the top of the rotation behind Sale. Skubal would make quite a bit of sense for a team with a rip-roaring offense that is going to be playing in October. Their playoff odds right now, I believe, are right around 97%. They'll be in the postseason. What would a deal look like for the Braves?
Well, they do have a whole bunch of young pitching. How the Tigers stack these guys up, and this is going to be relevant for any conversation we're having here, when we start talking about the Dodgers and the Brewers and how you stack up Logan Henderson and Robert Gasser and all these things. Atlanta is the same kind of situation. I mean, they have a lot of guys, a lot of whom we have seen in the major leagues, whether it's a J.R. Richie and Owen Murphy, Smith-Shaver. These guys are still really young. And then to me, the one that is most interesting is Didier Fuentes, because he's so young, is still in the bullpen, more so because the Braves are trying to be careful with his innings. But from a talent perspective, the upside with someone like Fuentes, now he's a smaller guy. Is he someone that you view for sure is like can be a front line or even a 2-3? This guy's throwing 108 innings for us every year. I don't know if he really fits that as well as some of the other younger pitchers that we might talk about. But I do think from an age and an upside standpoint, Fuentes is really interesting. And then there's also guys at the lower levels. Cam Caminiti, a recent first-round pick. Briggs McKenzie, a recent top pick. Those are farther away. But if they're just looking for upside arms, Atlanta does have them because they've been drafting a ton of them. And by the way, Atlanta also is probably willing to part with these guys because they just drafted another four high school pitchers this year who they paid a combined like $6 or $7 million. So they just restocked that again this summer, which means they might be willing to part with some of these guys.
The two other names that you didn't mention are AJ Smith-Shaver and Hurston Waldrop, both of whom have struggled with underperformance and injury Smith-Shawver is coming back from TJ. That's a guy with a huge pedigree and a big fastball that teams really like. I think any trio or duo that we just mentioned, depending on, you know, how it's assembled, could definitely get a deal done. And then the other thing about the Braves is this system has had a good year. I think they entered the season as one of the worst in the sport, and they've had some really nice performances. The one guy to mention there is Eric Hartman, a Canadian outfielder who I believe was like a 20th or 19th round pick that has just
20th round
been a complete breakout out of nowhere. One of the biggest breakouts in all of baseball. So that's the deal with the Braves. Could do it. Can they beat Tampa Bay or Milwaukee? Tampa Bay and Milwaukee, we can link together. These are two teams. When you look in the dictionary, you see sustainable winning during the regular season. You see Tampa Bay and Milwaukee. It is worth remembering, though, neither of these teams have actually freaking won anything in October. When the weather is cold and the games really matter, Tampa won the COVID Cup AL pennant in 2020. The Brewers, over this century, have reached Game 7 of the NLCS and nothing else. For all their accomplishments over the six-month marathon, they have failed the sprint. A sprint that this season, Tarek Skubal would be very helpful for. Both of these teams are going to be in October, 98% for the Rays, 99% for the Brewers. And these are the one, two, or three systems in the entire sport.
I think Tampa should be... I mean, the big difference, and this is true for so many different things we're going to talk about in the next few months and this week, Tampa's got a real path to the number one seed, potentially without even much of a fight, right? The Yankees are going to put up a fight, and they're going to have to fend them off. But there is a real opportunity for the Rays to have the top seed. And this is a team that has been the best home team in baseball this year in their return to the Trop. It's their best home record in franchise history. The last time their home record was this good, they went to the World Series. That was 2008. Whereas the Brewers, as we saw last year, home field only went so far. Once they dealt with the Dodgers, they're going to have to deal with the Braves. They might have to deal with the Phillies or the Cubs. It is a tough road. Does that mean that the Brewers are more motivated to make a super aggressive deal like this to try and give them the edge against these other top teams? Or is it the Rays, the possible upside of getting someone like Skubal even greater because it enhances their chances of getting to the World Series even further, not go farther? So the Rays, the other part I'm thinking about is just how bizarre of a deadline they had last year. You know, the last couple of years, they finished in fourth place. We say sustainable winning. Now they're back, but they had a bit of a dip. You know, Milwaukee has just keep on cruising. They have just win. They've had so few steps back over the last decade. Tampa Bay, this is a little bit, there was a little bit of a break there. And last year they had this ridiculous sequence of buying and selling that was very hard to understand. Some of those moves have turned out to be great. Some of those moves, it's like, what's going on here?
Yeah, so it's almost as if the Rays
now,
it's almost as if the Rays had a six-win shortstop that turned out to be a sex offender. You know, like that's part of the thing about Tampa when you talk about the last couple of years is like, this is an organization that was planning around Wander Franco for quite a bit of time. And then he was removed from the situation. And look, if we're heaping praise on the Rays, like, they need to be held accountable for failing to live up to those expectations the last couple of years. And Jordan, something that we haven't totally talked about, Tampa's traded away a lot of talent over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Or missed out on talent.
Yes.
Whether that's Curtis Meade or Tristan Peters or Taj Bradley, right? Like, there are some chinks in the armor here for the Rays. And I think that, like, going and getting Skubal at this deadline would be a pivot for them in terms of approach. And the same in that regard is true for Milwaukee.
Yeah, and everyone's like, oh, what about CeCe? That was a long time ago, obviously.
It was not
can't just keep these being guys. Like, oh. It was, yeah, it's different situation. I mean, could end up being similar, but I'm not using it as a data point as why they would or wouldn't do it now. Also, on the Rays, like, yes, obviously that is a huge derailment, but also Junior Caminero emerged as an MVP candidate, and their pitching is what has let them down the last couple seasons. I mean, yes, the offense as well, But the pitching has regressed in a way that is honestly surprising.
Sure.
And also part of why they need Derek Skubal, right? Or at least they're looking at it as a as something that could really put them over the top. But I do agree that it would be a deviation from both of these teams. And so their ability to outbid someone who is at least considered more aggressive. Alex Anthopoulos has not necessarily executed something this bold with Atlanta. He did trade for David Price with Toronto. That is at least a parallel worth considering when comparing those front office heads' aggressiveness.
Now, if Eric Neander of the Rays and Matt Arnold of the Brewers wake up on Monday morning and they say, we will do whatever it takes to get Skubal, I think Milwaukee has the advantage over Tampa in constructing a package when push comes to shove, just because of the starting pitching side of things, where Tampa's embarrassment of riches in their system is much more hitter-centric, whereas like the Brewers, whether it's Logan Henderson or Robert Gasser or any of the guys they have in the upper minors, I think are going to be more able to craft a package. The one dude who's not getting moved, though, that's Jesus Madé, probably the top prospect in all of baseball with the Brewers. They will not give him up for Tarek Skubal for 2 months of Tarek Skubal. Okay, let's get to the Dodgers. Jordan, a scout this week, an unnamed scout, a scout anonymity in exchange for candor, told me
the scout does that have Andrew a name. Friedman, you're just not naming him.
I'm not going to tell the name.
I just like unnamed.
Actually, every scout
always makes me laugh.
Every scout in my phone is just in there as anonymous scout 32. And I keep their identity private to me. This scout said, if Andrew Friedman wants Skubal, he'll get Skubal. And I think that that's true.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, the problem with this conversation is the Dodgers can do whatever they want. And this is the part that nobody wants to hear. For 100 reasons, and I don't blame them. But this farm system and what they have at the major league level in terms of arms they, in theory, could move off of. If they want to just put all of these pieces, just throw three top 100 outfielders and Emmett Sheehan and whatever, they can do that and still be the World Series favorite. So that doesn't mean they're going to land on that as the determination for what is best. I'm sure they... There have certainly been situations in the past five deadlines where they could have done something similar like this. Not that a Skubal has been always available, but there have been many opportunities for them to cash in on their deep farm system and probably do max it out, and they have opted not to. So that's why I don't think that they are definitely going to do it, but I do generally agree with the nameless scout sentiment that... They can. So if they want to make it happen, I don't think, and now we can turn it back to Scott Harris as we wrap up the conversation. I don't think Scott Harris is going to be concerned about people are going to be more mad about the Dodgers ruining baseball because they trade for Derek Skubal. If they give us all the best players, then have fun in Los Angeles, Tarek. Thanks for your service. So that's how this is going to go. The reporting out of LA over the last week has been a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of they're not planning anything, but also, you know, they could. And there is an argument to consolidation for this. Just I've never seen this amount of depth at one position for a prospect group. To my knowledge,
I'm talking about what the outfield.
They have in the outfield. It's truly comical what they have and still are still producing more and more, even at the lower levels. So now listen, I also am totally open to the idea, like for people that are just like, stop hugging your prospects. Half of these guys are going to suck. We shouldn't overvalue all these guys. That's true. But the reality is this is a farm system and players that are valued throughout the industry and are viewed as really attractive assets and players and future major league contributors. So you can't just pretend like that doesn't exist because you don't like them. So that's where I'm at. So do I think the Dodgers are going to do it? I don't, but I sure will not be surprised if that is the final destination.
Does he get traded? Has your mind changed in the last 28 minutes?
No, I'll just be team no.
Okay.
And I'll probably change my mind on Friday. I think the last thing, do you want to, I have one last point before we take a break, but what about you? Are you, have you, has your mind changed in the other direction? Have you,
no,
have
I'm
you
decided team yes.
actually? No, no. Okay. Team yes.
I'm team yes. Team yes. Do manifest you wanna, the world you want to live in, baby.
Do you want to pick a team?
Do I want to pick a team? Yeah, I'll say the Braves.
Okay. Nice. I like that. I think I'm
leaning. You want to pick a team?
I think I'm leaning in that direction too. I think I'm them or Tampa. I think I'm going with them or Tampa.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Over Milwaukee, but we will see. Here's my last point about this. I'll just say, literally no matter what, if Tarek Skubal gets traded, I cannot envision any scenario where the average fan is anything other than, oh my God, we got Tarek Skubal. Like, I don't think that this is going to be a package like Juan Soto, where it was like, oh my God, I can't believe they traded Juan Soto, but also, wow, they got so much for Juan Soto. I just don't think that this package, however it's going to be, all these, you know, pitchers we just went through who have talent and are reasons to be excited, I don't really see how the Tigers are going to win the PR of this if they trade him, pretty much no matter what. I just, and I'm not saying that I will get on here and say that was a bad trade or this was the wrong decision. But I think that there have been trades in the past that have been tough to do where you can be like, man, yeah, but they did pretty well. Maybe some team does end up overpaying by our whatever your preferred model says. And I guess that is probably likely if it does happen, because we do think that the bidding will get significant because it's going to take a lot to get him. I just think for a rental for a guy that has just had elbow surgery 2 months ago, I think that whatever it's going to be is going to end up people being like, wow, yeah, duh, you did that for Tarek Skubal. Of course, you're going for it. So that's kind of where I think this is going to go if he does get moved. You think it's going to be a deal where it's like, damn, they crushed it. Good job, Scott Harris. I mean, maybe.
I think it has to be. Like, I don't think that the PR side of things here is relevant in the short term, because if you're trading Skubal, you can go out and say we still believe in our current roster in 2026 and no one is going to believe you. That's whatever. What you're really doing is you're planning for 2027. And I think that is how the trade should be evaluated, right? If the Tigers are going to enter life without Tarek Skubal next season in one way or the other, almost certainly, they expect to contend without him. Do the pieces they get back for him help achieve that goal? That is, I think, the way that we evaluate this trade. And if Scott Harris goes out and acquires a bunch of dudes in low A, then I think that's a problem. If Scott Harris goes out and gets Justin Wroblewski, like I mentioned before, which I don't think will happen, that changes the dynamic. And so I do think there is a world where we look at the package and we can't believe it. That only happens if there are two teams bidding against one another. And I am, I think, skeptical that there will be two desperate operators in these sweepstakes. Jordan, has your mind changed in the last 3 minutes? Does Skubal get traded?
ask me on Friday. You can only ask me so many times in the same episode, but I appreciate you trying. We're going to take a break. When we return, we will move to the players that are absolutely getting traded. And every time Jake asks me, I will say, yes, he is getting traded. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecue.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We just wasted half an hour of your precious time hypothesizing about a trade that Jordan doesn't even think is going to happen. Let's talk about some things that will definitely happen. One player that will be on the move from all of the bad teams. We will begin where else but Queens, the epicenter of baseballing woe. This 2026 season, the Mets entered the year with big expectations, and all they have done is fall face first in a pile of mud. Who will be out the door from the Mets?
Their expiring contracts include AJ Minter, Freddie Peralta, Brooks Raley, Tyrone Taylor. Clay Holmes, you can also put in that bucket. Luis Robert, they do have team options. In Robert's case, player options. In Clay Holmes' case for next year, you can include those guys in essentially expiring contracts as well. So those are six players that I don't really see any reason, unless they can work out an extension with Clay Holmes, which it does not seem like they're making any progress
not
on.
Not happening.
When Clay Holmes was asked about it. Those are six players that I guess I would just frankly be shocked are still on the Mets in a week. So again, that's Robert, Robert Taylor on the offensive side, and then Raley, Minter, Peralta, and Holmes on the pitching side. I think those, do you agree with me? Like, there's really no reason that those guys should be on the Mets in a week.
Everything I'm hearing would suggest that they are being aggressive in shopping all of those players. There are some teams that are on the fence or even moving towards sell that have really yet to pick up the phone and say, hey, we're looking to move this guy. That is not the case with the Mets. Like, the Mets, like, David Stearns is being active and reaching out to teams to let them know that these players are available. And the one that compels me more than anyone else is Freddie Peralta. Entered this season as one of the biggest pieces moved over the winter and has spent the last 4 months underperforming at every turn. I believe his ERA is just a tick under five at this point. And he has not been the ace that the Mets hoped they were getting. And the thing about Peralta that is interesting, there's two things here that I want to mention on Freddie Peralta. Whatever team acquires him needs to have a plan. Because I think that copying and pasting him into a different atmosphere, setting, ecosystem is not a sufficient enough approach to get this guy right. You can't just say, we're saving you from the stink of the 2026 Mets and that'll figure everything out. No, they need to have a real plan on how to get Freddie Peralta back to being Freddie Peralta. And the other thing about him is you could deploy him if you don't have that plan. You could deploy him as an underwhelming, capable five starter for the rest of the season and then just put him in the bullpen in October. That is another way to do it.
Yeah, but like, is that the team that's going to trade for him? Probably not.
Right.
But I guess that right. is a fallback plan. Two other quick things.
Like
the
Phillies.
Mets. Luke Weaver.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Do I think that the Phillies are going to make a deal with the Mets? Probably not. But like, if the Phillies go out and get Freddie Peralta to be their five starter, and then they just like that would fit. That would make some sense.
Sure. But other teams need him more in whatever form. And also, it's just interesting because we thought he was barreling towards getting a ton of money this winter. And if he still wants to do that, he's going to have to pitch a whole lot better down the stretch. The opportunity will be there for him to improve on a team that's contending, but he certainly has a lot to prove because of how bad he's been for 4 months. I definitely just want to mention Luke Weaver as a reliever who's just been terrific and is under contract for next year at a good amount of money for a reliever. But if teams want a rock solid seventh or eighth inning guy, or even a closer, depending on who you are, I have to imagine they're at least going to consider moving him unless they think like, no, he has to be a part of our 2027 bullpen, which maybe they do see that, but I think they're going to consider that. And then I'll just say it. I don't know what any Lindor trade stuff. I don't understand where this came from. It makes no sense to me. It's like one of the strangest. It's bizarre. I can't even believe that I'm seeing Mets fans having to like explain that we shouldn't trade Francisco Lindor, or that it's not likely. I don't get it. That does not interest me, and I'm just confused by it. So I'm going to put that to bed. All right. Let's move to the Giants of San Francisco. Man, what a disastrous ball club. Friends, don't worry. We will discuss Harrison Bader's scooter accident on Friday. You can probably guess.
Harrison Bader's podcast. Second scooter accident.
Oh, spoilers. Spoilers, yes. But let's focus on who is going to get traded, because we know that Harrison Bader doesn't have a whole lot of trade value right now. And that focus is on Luis Arraez and Robbie Ray, who are their expiring contracts. I think the question with the Giants is just, Would they go farther than that with guys under contract a little bit longer, whether that's a Chapman or a Jung-Hoo Lee or a, you know, a Devers? I mean, Devers has been unbelievable for, you know, a few months, but I don't think anyone's trading for that contract again. Any of their younger starters, I don't think they're trading Logan Webb. So I think that they can just stay focused on a rise in Robbie Ray, who should be able to get them some decent stuff, and just try to nail those trades and probably not complicate this any further would be my recommendation for Mr. Poboszy.
Can we spend a little bit of time with Luis Arraez? One of the more remarkable seasons that we've seen in quite some time, going from a buns defensive first baseman to a supremely good defensive second baseman. His offensive production has also ticked up this season. What are the fits here? I think Boston went from a great fit to a bad fit until Curtis Meade broke his wrist immediately, fractured, and is going to be on the IL for a while. I would say now they're back in on Luis Arraez. Are the Giants and Red Sox going to make another deal? Hard to say. I think he's a decent fit for the Yankees if they can whisper sweet nothings into Jazz Chisholm's ear and get him to play a little bit more third base every day as he did a couple of years ago. I think he could be a fit in Tampa Bay where they're already deploying a very contact-heavy approach and playing friend of the program Richie Palacios at second base on a regular basis. Are there any other landing spots for Arraez that catch your eye?
Texas. Texas is like a total layup for me. I think that's the one that has not been getting a ton of second base production this season. And that's like right the level of I expect them to be aggressive. Do I expect them to have enough to like really make some huge deal? No. But maybe Arraez, if he's like the obvious best hitter available. We keep talking about him as like, will a better hitter than Arraez get traded? I'm still not sure about that. But yeah, that would be the other team that I would look at pretty closely. I guess the Dodgers, but that would be, I don't see Buster Posey helping the Dodgers out on purpose. So yeah.
Robbie Ray, everybody could use a left-handed starter. I don't think that one is particularly compelling. Let's move on to another seller, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I said on the last podcast that I thought Zach Neto would be the best player traded at this deadline. Mm. I no longer stand by that because I think Tarek Skubal's going to get traded.
Yeah, I just think it's more likely that they move the pitchers. I think it's going to be hard to come. Sure. I think Zach Neto's trade value is probably a pretty difficult thing to nail down right now, and I can imagine there just being a lot of incompatibility about what they're looking for considering the season he's having, but also the upside that he's shown. Whereas I do at this point expect at least one of Detmers or Soriano to go. That feels like it should be the focus for Los Angeles, and those are two very different pitchers with very different strengths and weaknesses. And so if and when that happens, I look forward to talking about that. But based on how they're I think they're going to listen on Neto. I just think that's a tough one. Whereas Detmers and Soriano, now Soriano is also a tough one to figure out because of how amazing he was to start the season and how bad he's been since. Detmers, it's been a little steadier.
Yeah.
I think the focus is going to be on moving those arms if I'm Johnny Mozeliak.
And I think what's important to understand is that there is a lot of starting pitching available at this deadline. There's not really a lot of like controllable starting pitching on bad teams available. Guys that are willing to like that type of player. And for that reason, I think Detmers Soriano is a good fit for clubs that are kind of in the mix, but might not actually be their year, whether that's the Nats or the White Sox, right? Yep. Maybe even the Marlins. They buy like that. But where the Diamondbacks, maybe, where it's we're good now, but we want to be good for a while, let's go get someone with a little bit more control, as opposed to a team like the Astros, who appear to be living more for today. Let's go from the Angels to the Rockies, who have a cornucopia of tradable players that make you go,
Yeah, I will say Jake McCarthy, we have talked a little bit about Mickey Moniak and the fun season he's having. I know he had a bit of an injury, but we're still looking at a guy. Yes, cores. Yes, platoon splits. Mickey Moniak has a 567 slugging percentage in 260 plate appearances. So I would imagine that will be attractive to some team. That said, Jake McCarthy also having a pretty nice season. Now, he's also kind of a volatile offensive player, but he's one of the fastest players in baseball. I think speed and defense at the very least, kind of a slash and dash approach. Left-handed, so teams are really chasing righties more so, but that's a player that I think could cash in on. But I'm most interested with Colorado is how many of these relievers they unload. Senzatella, one of the longest tenured Rockies, also an expiring contract. I expect him to move. He's been really good since he moved to the bullpen. But they've got a lot of these younger guys. They already traded Seth Halverson, but Juan Mejia and, you know, Jaden Hill, some of these guys are injured. Bernardino's more of a veteran guy. But I'd be curious if they flip any of those hard-throwing relievers like Halverson.
A Rockies reliever that you've never thought about is going to become a main character in October.
Might be Seth Halverson, but it also could be one of these other guys at some point. So, I think the Rockies, I think they'll do some stuff.
I think we can group the next two teams together, the Royals and the A's, two absolute disasters that, frankly, don't really have a whole lot to deal away. The Royals will probably trade Lane Thomas. He kills lefties.
Man. What's that? It's just like, by the way, Lane Thomas has been better than I. Like, he's back to pretty much what he was before his completely non-existent season last year due to injuries. So he'll help someone. Teams want right-handed hitting. Like, he'll get traded. He'll be fine. I just am thinking about, there are teams when they're think about the Mets, for example, or even the Blue Jays, who we're about to talk about. It's a disaster. It's depressing. It's bleak. But once you accept it, you're like, all right, like, we got some stuff to move. Like, let's get after it. Let's try to get some prospects. I'm just thinking about how bleak it is, like, when you're a team like the Royals or A's, when everything goes wrong and you're looking around and you're just like, hey, we just kind of have to.
Oh, wait. No.
There's not even anything to, like, quote unquote, look forward to where we can, like, add a bunch of stuff at the deadline because we have nothing to trade. I mean, the Royals could trade Michael Wacha and get some stuff, but it doesn't seem like they want to do that. And then the A's, man, I mean, this has just been a miserable few weeks, and Langeliers is out for the year now, probably, and they just have nothing to trade. It's dark times in Yolo County.
The Reds and the Jays will group together as teams that will probably sell, but definitely should. At time of recording, the Reds, I believe, are four games out in the wild card, five games out.
Yep.
In the NL wildcard picture, six games under 500. The Jays are 10 games under 500, ooh, 5.5 back in the AL wildcard. Jordan, when Bobichette went yard last October, I thought we'd live forever. Turns out that's not the case. Instead, we're all going to die as soon, maybe, as this weekend. The Jays do have a lot to deal.
They do. They sure do. I mean, it's going to hurt. It's going to be sad. This is about as somber of a sell-off as could be. I mean, I guess you could put the Mets in that bucket, but to me, the idea that the Jays could deal Gausman, Springer, and Varsho over the next week, all expiring contracts, and Bieber, who just had a catastrophic outing against the Nats after one of his best outings as a Blue Jay right before that. So, no clue what to make of Shane Bieber, but I imagine they're going to at least be willing to trade him. I mean, I wouldn't.
He walked,
I wouldn't be
six
counting
people
on
yesterday in the first inning.
In the first inning, yeah.
He got two outs.
Seven,
walked six guys.
Seven scoreless the outing before. So, but those, think about how significant those characters are. I mean, Gausman and Springer, I don't have to over. I mean, those are really, besides Vlad and Bo, the defining players of this era of Blue Jays baseball. I mean, am I wrong? I mean, those signings were so important, and obviously what they were able to give, especially Springer last year, they're hugely consequential. Sure. Now, how does that mean they're about to get traded for a bunch of top 100 prospects? Not necessarily. I think Gausman might, because he's someone that you can imagine teams would be, trust to start a playoff game. But just the emotional devastation of this season for Toronto is really kind of tough to really reckon with.
Reckle with. Who could trade for Springer? Gausman is... Whenever we talk about starting pitchers, I think it's silly to think about fits because every team could use a Kevin Gausman right now that's in the mix. Whereas for Springer, it's like, okay, not everybody has a hole for a right-handed hitter, a designated hitter, right? Like, those are not a dime a dozen. The Padres, if the Pirates want to put Marcell Ozuna to sleep, they could be a decent fit. I guess the Diamondbacks are doing a lot of Adrian Del Castillo at DH. Do the Brewers go ahead and get Springer as replacement for Jake Bowers, who just got hurt? I know Bowers is a lefty. Where else do you think Springer could land? Because he can't play outfield anymore.
Yes. As messed up as this is, Seattle? I mean, in terms of right-handed DHs, like there actually are a lot of spots that teams could talk themselves into it. And I think most importantly, George Springer has been hitting the ball really well over the last three or four weeks in a way that over the first couple months, it was like, okay, it's over. He's cooked. He's whatever happened last year. You know, he's over the hill. He turns 37 in September. So you got to price that in, but, I don't know. I think someone will probably talk themselves into George Springer, and that's going to be a tough. It's going to be a tough phone call.
My good pal Jordan Schusterman, do you remember my bold prediction at the beginning of the season?
That is it. Was it about George Springer?
George Springer traded back to the Astros, the next in a long line.
That was one of your bold predictions.
I believe so.
I don't remember that at all, but. That does make sense. That's a lot of Yordan in the outfield.
Astros bold prediction. I'm looking at it right now. Trade for George Springer at the deadline.
Wow. I have no recollection of that, but I'll trust you there. That is sure. Like I said, that means that one of him or Yordan are going to have to play a lot more outfield, which is probably not plan A, but, sure. Sure. The Astros have done crazier things. We've seen them reunite.
I have to say.
So,
yeah. I'm so excited. We're going to do this after the deadline to go back and do bold prediction check-in because.
Oh boy. I mean, I don't know if we got to give it some time. We can do it off the air and save it for the end of the season. Just be glad you got that Giancarlo Stanton stolen base. That's all I'm going to say. All right. Because, you know.
Yeah, I don't think Garrett Crochet is going to hit 230 innings pitched, as I so boldly predicted. All right, let's take a break.
I don't.
Let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll go around the league and talk about the Seattle Mariners. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's fly around the league. Gotta say, Jordan, last night felt like old times. You and me staying up late, texting as the Seattle Mariners played baseball deep into the night. Win of the season for your woebegone Mariners. Mm-hmm. A truly bizarre season. For the M's, did they get right last night at Dodger Stadium with a topsy-turvy victory over the two-time defending World Series champions? It was not a pretty game, but the W's in the standings, it's not a beauty contest. Let's do a little vibe check on the Seattle Mariners, who entered the year with large expectations that they have not fulfilled. What's gone wrong and what could still go right?
Yeah, I mean, really haven't talked about Seattle much on this pod because they've really just been stuck in the mud to the point where they They haven't had a skid to where we were focusing on how embarrassing they were. Because the AL West has been so bad, they've generally been hovering around first place. But this past weekend, we didn't really talk about it because they were still finishing that series, the four games in Texas, Friday to Monday. But that loss on Monday was like, oh boy, this is heading to a dark place. Now, did I think that that loss, as they fell into third place, I think, briefly, behind?
Still in third behind place. They're still in third place
still,
behind the
still
Astros.
In third place. Still in third back. Place behind the Astros. Did that make me think, oh, it's over, they're doomed, they're going to sell, they're going to trade Randy? No, I don't know what would have had to happen for me to think that that was even remotely in play. I've maintained that this is not a franchise or a front office or a roster that should be going backwards right now. It's just absurd. And especially in this year's American League, when you can still look at this roster and say, yeah, this was one, should be one of the best teams in the league. I think that underscores both what they can still achieve and also how disappointing they've been. I think that at this point, and we'll talk about the positives of last night, among the teams that are not cooked, right? We move the Blue Jays probably to the side. We move the Mets disaster to the side. Maybe the Tigers, depending on how this next week goes. I think they're the most disappointing team in baseball so far when you consider what the expectations were coming into the year. I do think that the expectations outside of Seattle were higher for the Mariners than they probably even were internally coming into the year. And that made me uncomfortable to begin with. I was like, whoa, I do not remember, even over the past half decade when they've had
good teams. Stop looking at me.
I cannot remember people being like, oh, that team's awesome. They're clearly the favorite in the American League. I was like, no, let's slow down here. And the offense has been just really disappointing. Cal Raleigh's injury and then just step back is historic in nature, however you slice it. Josh Naylor has been incredibly disappointing in his first full season as a Mariner. Julio has not been bad, but he has not been great other than in May. And other than Randy Arozarena, they just have not had a consistent threat offensively, on-base threat, power threat. Other than really Dom Canzone, who becomes a main character last night as he hits two home runs against a lefty, against two different lefties for the Dodgers, including a go-ahead blast late, both to dead center field. Canzone's been awesome, but he's also been more in this platoon role and DH role, so probably should have been playing against lefties more, but he wasn't. And frankly, as much as we laud this rotation and the surplus that they do have because all these pitchers are good and talented and under team control, they've also disappointed. Yes, you look at it and be like, oh my God, this starting staff is elite. No, all of these guys have been inconsistent enough to where they don't necessarily rank as this elite rotation. It looks like it. When you catch any of these guys on their best night, they're all capable of looking like an all-star pitcher because all of them have been all-star pitchers except Bryce Miller, who probably will be someday. So like all the pieces are there. You catch the Mariners on their best night. It's like, yeah, that's one of the best teams in the AL. But man, they just have not been able to find any sort of momentum. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things you could point to at that. But at this point, you just have to look forward and say, what can they still accomplish? What is the opportunity that is still there for them? And I think you can't deny that even at 53 and 55 in third place, which is a disaster compared to preseason expectations, there's still a big chance for them to go on a run in the second half.
What does a good deadline look like? Because they're in this weird spot where they're underperforming players, catcher and first base. Like Cal Raleigh and Josh Naylor are going to play every day. They're going to go down with those guys, right? So it's not like they're going to acquire Ryan Jeffers or, you know, that's not what's going to happen. So where are the spaces for trade upgrades?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably right-handed hitting outfielders. I think the DH spot, Ref Snyder came back last night. Now, that was a signing that it was like, well, perfect. He's been the lefty killer for 5 years. Well, this is exactly what they need. He was truly the worst hitter in baseball for the first few months. Got injured, came back, two huge hits last night. Maybe he can settle back into that role and you know, he saves his job just in time. But still in the outfield.
Mason Miller?
Victor Robles. Well, so the bullpen for sure. Like they do need to add another reliever because as amazing as Munoz has been for the last month, and like if you watched him last night, dude is cooking about as well as he has been as a Mariner. Yeah. But Spire has not been the same. Ferrer has been a good addition, but him and Bizzardo, it's like that's not exactly like first we feel awesome about this. And Brash has just not been. Weaver would be a fantastic addition. I don't think the Mariners are going to acquire a reliever making that much money, which is, that's sad because they shouldn't be concerned about that. They should be getting the best baseball players. But that's a fantastic fit. I think, or you call the Padres about Morahone. You know, maybe you say, all right, we are willing to kind of pay a steep prospect price or Emerson Hancock for Adrian Morahone.
Emerson Hancock for Mason Miller, who says no.
The Padres say no. George Kirby for Mason Miller, a little bit more interesting. But I don't think that they're going to trade George. I do think that they're going to try to move Hancock, maybe Castillo, for some sort of offensive help, and then trade prospects for a reliever or two. And then just hope that your really talented, famous baseball players start playing better. Because I think that that's kind of,
dude,
that's what they went in the season with. And I think that there's a chance that works. There's a chance it doesn't. We'll see.
I'm too self-respecting. Think too highly of myself to say what I'm about to say. This team just doesn't look like it's got the sauce right now, man. And I think that Dan Wilson, their manager, is a huge part of that. They panned to him in the dugout, and it doesn't look right. And I don't think that baseball teams should be making decisions on things like that. You know, like the vibes are off or it doesn't look. But just Dan Wilson, I don't think that's the guy. I'm willing to be wrong. I hope it turns around. But he does not exude confidence either with his decision-making or with his overall demeanor. And I never want to advocate for someone to lose their job. However, I am curious if we look back on this era of Mariners baseball and we say, man, if only they had had someone else at the helm. That is my worry.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question that has been asked on many occasions, not just after the postseason last year, but a lot of times this year. And I think that's totally fair. And I think that when we were texting last night, like, I think you made a totally fair point. And how much of this is Wilson, but just like how this season has gone and how much of it is just expectations that this franchise hasn't necessarily been used to. But, you know, when this team really came out of this rebuild in 2021 and 2022 and 2023, boy, were they having a good time. You know, I mean, this was a team that was fun to watch. This team, it was much more imperfect. The roster was not nearly as good as you seems to be right now, but they were having a blast. And by the way, we did see that by the end of the season last year, but for a lot of last year too, it was a slog to watch the Mariners. It was not an enjoyable product. The players did not seem to be like, it just felt very, just they all felt, ugh, they felt tight.
Does Dan Wilson look like he's having a good time? No. Now, no, Scott Servais never really exuded that either.
He did.
But I think it would be nice for the Mariners to have a manager that, like, looks like he wants to be there.
Yeah, and it's, God, I mean, the Wilson conversation is just, we don't have time for it. I mean, maybe we will have it again at some point in the season. But, it's just really weird because the front office deserves a lot of credit. They have drafted and developed and acquired and traded for. And, like, they have this team that it's like, yes, this is what so many fans would look at this roster and be like, that's awesome. This is, wow, we have so many things going right. You have this incredible closer and all these homegrown starting pitchers and a generational center fielder and catcher and all these things. And, oh, you've just drafted a guy who just came to the big leagues at 20 and Cole Emerson. All these things are checking all of these boxes. And yet it's just like, I don't know, man.
It's not fun.
It's weird, fun. But I think Jerry will add to his, I think he, you know, he's, his next trade will be his 206th as head of the Mariners baseball operations. So I'll be keeping that DePoto tracker open and ready over the next week, but we will see what they're able to do. Quick other thing on Mariners Dodgers, because this doesn't happen very often. Shohei Ohtani spoke into microphones. Now, Shohei Ohtani generally.
How's your bicep? How's your bicep, Jordan? How's your sep? Let me see it. Maybe Ohtani, that was Ohtani's strategy. He was like, yeah, my bicep hurts. And he just flexes towards the camera.
So Ohtani, traditionally, you will only hear him speak. You know, in spring training, he'll do it maybe once a week or whatever. And then he usually only talks after he starts, when he starts on the mound, or normally when he's at the All-Star game. Well, what has not been happening, what has not occurred in the last month? Shohei Ohtani at the All-Star game or Shohei Ohtani on the mound And so because of that, he has not been saying, all right, guys, let's chat. Let's catch up. Hey, Kirsten Watson, what's going on? Let's talk about it. But last night, for some reason, although I appreciate Dodgers PR for finally putting Ohtani in front of a microphone, after their
don't
loss,
give them points. Loss. Don't give the Dodgers PR team pizza points for making the game's best player available for the first time in 3 weeks.
It's a joke.
Come
it's
on
joke.
Now.
It's a joke. It's a joke. It's a joke. It's a joke. Okay. If the tone of my talking about Ohtani.
Okay, just making
how
sure.
How little he talks. Is, sure. Okay, no.
Jack so, Harris is going to jump into your apartment and tackle you to the ground.
He listen, Jack. Jack's a listener. Let me know how you feel about how I said that. He spoke after that loss against the Mariners. He hit a leadoff home run. As we've been talking about this knee issue that Ohtani's dealing with that is preventing him from getting back on the mound, we continue to acknowledge that he seems to be just fine, being one of the best hitters in the world and leading off for the Dodgers most days, if not every day. However, last night he also revealed that part of the reason why his bullpen was squashed the other day was that he's also dealing with a bicep issue. To which Jake referred to, he's just being like, yo, look at me. I'm Shohei Ohtani. I live.
Check this out.
But this just adds another layer of uncertainty to when we are going to see him pitch again this season. He did say that he was, I think, felt like he was 90% in the last bullpen that he threw. So that's not nothing. But it does seem like we are now back to no timeline and just focus on hitting homers.
Yeah, I'm not hopeful he's going to pitch for a bit. Also, since the All-Star break, kind of been bad hitting. Friend of the program, Maddie Lee, asked Dave Roberts a question when I was around the Dodgers a week and a half ago. Hitting might not affect the knee, but is the knee affecting the hitting? Well phrased. Mm. He's got a 687 ops in 10 games since the All-Star break. Small sample size or cause for concern? Who's to say? I am tired of the Ohtani knee stuff kind of already. It is really significant, obviously, because it is Ohtani. It is difficult to know anything because he never says anything. And Dave Roberts is like, oh, you have to ask Shohei. And then, like, you can't. So I'm not sure what to do. But that, the Ipe pod came out. I listened to the first two episodes of the evil Ipe and his betrayal of Shohei Ohtani. Two things here. One, the most revealing part of the pod, for those of that have not listened, is actual recordings of the phone call between Tisha Thompson and Ipe Mizuhara as this investigation was kind of unraveling in Ipe's face at the beginning of the 2024 season. The humanity of it is what's most jarring. Like, this is a broken man at that point, and it's just a bummer to hear. I think that at the same, like, I don't listen to this and feel like I learned anything new. Maybe I'm too close to the screen, but like, I don't think Ohtani did it. I think that Ipe did it. And I think that in some ways this podcast is unintentionally resurfacing the conspiracy theorists that believe Ohtani is culpable. Now, what is, I think, obvious from listening to the pod is that like Ohtani needed to have taken more responsibility for his own freaking life. Like, I understand that Ipe was the conduit to his world in America, but like, you're like living in on Earth, Mr. Ohtani. Like, let's open our eyes and be a little bit aware here. And that is true for his agent, Nesbolelo, who is like not really involved in the first two episodes as a character very much. The whole thing is fascinating and just a total bummer.
Yeah. Once the series is over, maybe we can have a longer conversation about it. We'll see what else we learn from that. I have not listened to the two yet, but I will be doing that shortly. All right. Finally, before we say goodbye, as the deadline approaches, just a couple other teams we're thinking about that are more in the middle. I have my trade deadline tiers come out today, trying to break down, you know, going from buyers to sellers. And there's still those teams in the middle in both the American League and the National League, right outside the wild card picture, where it's like, where are they going to end up leaning? And I think two teams we're thinking about right now, central teams, one in the AL, one in the NL, are the Cardinals and the Twins. Start with the Twins. A riveting walk-off triple from Royce Lewis last night to beat the Kansas City Royals and come back to get back to 500 to get into a playoff spot, half game out. Where are the Twins right now? They are half game behind the Cleveland Guardians, who split a doubleheader with the Reds yesterday. And they're probably saying, why not the division? Why not us? Jeremy Zoll, the GM who took over for Derek Falvey in January when he decided to leave the organization or mutually part ways, however you want to determine that. But Jeremy Zoll had been the AGM there for a while. He came out before their rousing win yesterday and said, we're not looking to subtract here. Like, we're going to try to get help. We want to play meaningful September games. And I think that the new ownership change, where they went from one Polad brother to the other, few teams had more rancid vibes over the offseason and just like lack of hope, lack of excitement because of how few moves they made. This is part of what I wrote about in my Joe Ryan piece earlier this week. And yet it does seem like their new ownership is just like, listen, if we're in this, we need to give the fans something to feel good about after what they did last year. And whether that is the right call, considering the current state of the organization and their chances of winning it all this year, or what they could get for Joe Ryan or Ryan Jeffers, whatever, I don't know. But honestly, after what this fan base dealt with last year, I actually like this. And I'm curious to see what it looks like for the Twins to be buyers. They have some interesting players at the top of their farm system that either they could move or they could call up in the second half, whether that's a Kalen Culpepper or Walker Jenkins. And the sad irony of it is that if this team had a bullpen that was not completely, you know, blown to smithereens at the deadline last year, and if they had made any efforts to replace any of those guys over the offseason, this team might be in first place. Instead, they have one of the worst bullpens in baseball and desperately need to address that in some form over the next few days if they want to be taken seriously for the rest of the season. And I think that they're going to try to do that. But they're working from a pretty deep hole in terms of what that bullpen looks like right now. So we'll see.
All right, let's get out of here. I'm done.
We're done.
Enjoy your Wednesdays. Enjoy your Thursdays.
We're done. I mentioned the Cardinals. I think they're going to be sellers. I think they're going to trade some good players. We'll see what happens there. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz, Ingrid Rosas for producing. We'll be back on Friday. Will we have another big trade to talk about that by then? Maybe. Maybe not. Remember, folks, the trade deadline is later than ever this year, so teams are going to procrastinate as much as possible. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Make sure you subscribe to the Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel. We appreciate your support over there. We will talk to you all later this week. See ya.